It's a great honor for us to have with us today Dr. John Hagelin, who is a Harvard-trained quantum physicist, lifelong educator, author, and leading researcher on higher states of consciousness. He is director of the Institute of Science, Technology, and Public Policy, a progressive science and public policy think tank. Dr. Hagelin was the 2000 presidential and year 2000 presidential candidate of the Natural Law Party. That's where we got turned on to him. We saw him on television. But yeah, that guy is saying what we really want to hear. But anyway, it's a new political party dedicated to promoting sustainable, life-affirming policies and programs that are in harmony with natural law. Under Dr. Hagelin's leadership, the party became the fastest growing political party in America, fielding more than 400 candidates on the ballot in 48 states in 1996. Dr. Hagelin has recently founded the U.S. Peace Government, a complementary government dedicated to prevention-oriented administration. At a historic press conference in Washington, D.C. on July 2nd of this year, Dr. Hagelin stated that, quote, the U.S. peace government is being founded today to prevent problems and violence in America and to promote peace in the world. With that, let's give a warm welcome to Dr. Hagelin.
Thank you very much. Thanks so much. Really very, very wonderful to be here. I want to thank Cody and Robin for a beautiful conference and a wonderful forum in which I'd like to release some very exciting research, I think world-transforming research on higher states of consciousness. And I'll share some things with you, time allowing, that I haven't shared in any detail in any public talk before. I'm going to be talking about higher states of consciousness, the discovery of the unified field, and that as a foundation for a global transformation to a new civilization of unity and of peace. I have to start, though, with 3 minutes of science. Not too painful. You can hold your breath for 3 minutes. And I need to talk a little bit about the universe to understand deeply the truth and reality of higher states of consciousness, what they fundamentally are. So what I've tried to do is on this one chart, 300 years of research into the nature of our physical universe. And what you can see at a glance, even if you can't read the words, is that our universe is structured in layers of creation, from superficial at the top of this chart to profound at the bottom of this chart, from macroscopic to microscopic, from diversified to unified, from complex to fundamentally simple. This is the world of billiard ball mechanics and celestial mechanics. This is the world of the atom and the atomic nucleus, the domain of quantum mechanics. This is the world of the elementary particles, so-called quantum field theory, in their progressive stages of unification. And this is the recent discovery of the unified field, or superstring field, which represents the discovery of a universal field of intelligence governing the universe, a universal field of consciousness at the basis of you, at the basis of me, at the basis of everyone and everything in existence. The important thing to understand here, in addition to the fact that our universe is structured in layers of creation, worlds within worlds within worlds, that these deeper worlds at the atomic and nuclear and subnuclear levels are not just smaller. They are qualitatively different. They have their own language, their own logic, their own mathematics. And more importantly, each of these inner worlds is more awake, more intelligent, more dynamic. The qualities of life, of consciousness, of subjectivity are becoming increasingly lively at these fundamental scales. Until, with the discovery of the unified field, what we have is a wholly non-material, infinitely dynamic, self-aware, self-interacting field of pure creative intelligence. Now, if we were an audience of physicists or engineers or medical doctors, I would spend 15 minutes right now proving to you that this unified field is an infinitely dynamic, non-material field of self-aware intelligence. But let me just put it on the level of common sense. And a few little arguments. You know the quantum principle, the so-called uncertainty principle? What does it say? It's the principle of increasing dynamism at fundamental scales. It's why nuclear power is a million times more energetic than molecular power, than chemical transformations, than simply burning an object. And why is nuclear power a million times more powerful than chemical power? It's because the nucleus is a million times smaller, a million times more fundamental, and hence a million times more powerful than the chemical level. So the deeper you go in nature, the more dynamic nature becomes. Nature wakes up. An increasingly concentrated intelligence expressed in the structure of nature, because this completely unified, indivisible wholeness of life at the basis of all these diversified streams of natural law governing life throughout the universe. What are the laws of nature? They're the orderly principles, the intelligent principles that govern the world around us. So the unified field, as the unified fountainhead of all these myriad laws of nature governing the vast galactic universe, that field must be the most concentrated field of intelligence in nature. And wide awake to itself. Other fields, like the field of light, way up here, electromagnetism, light doesn't have quite this property of self-awareness. Two beams of light, and I only have one, but two beams of light pass right through each other with no scattering, no interaction, no awareness of each other's presence. Light is not aware of light. However, this unified field is aware of itself. It responds dynamically to its own presence, and because of that dynamical self-interaction, systematically brings forth the diversified structure of natural law governing the universe. So the unified field is self-aware, self-interacting, which is a good thing, because there ain't nothing else down there for it to interact with. And it is on the basis of this dynamical self-interaction that the unified field creates creation. So what we have at the foundation of this superficially material universe, the superficially inert universe, is a field of pure life, a field of pure intelligence, a field of pure subjectivity, pure self-awareness. And that's extraordinary. Certainly extraordinary to an audience of engineers and medical doctors who live in a different worldview. It's not their fault. It's the result of 300 years of scientific investigation into billiard ball mechanics. And after 300 years of studying that, you get the impression that the universe is a dead place. You know that whole expression, consciousness, it's a fluke of the universe, a happenstance, bizarre occurrence in an overwhelmingly dead universe. And now we're saying that the core of life, the core of the universe, is pure life. That is remarkable, a revelation, controversial, frankly, in the community of physical scientists. But if I ask this group, is the core of life responsible for the emergence of mind, matter, the whole universe with trillions of galaxies, each with 100 billion suns, and that sustains and nourishes and governs the lives of 7.5 million species here on Earth, in Earth's intricate ecosystems, is that source of nature's intelligence a field of death, or a field of life, a field of intelligence, a field of consciousness? What is it, consciousness or death? I rest my case. But what we've done in these first few minutes, it took some time, we've reversed an entire worldview in which consciousness is a fluke in an overwhelmingly dead universe, to a whole new view in which matter, the material world, which exists only at the surface level of expression of nature, way up here, that this is just the classical tip of an immense quantum mechanical iceberg, and that, in fact, matter is a fluke in an overwhelmingly conscious universe. Now we're in a position to understand higher states of consciousness. What is the meditative experience? What is spiritual experience? What is holistic experience that has been described since time immemorial in every major culture, every major tradition? The human mind, remarkably, has the capability to traverse finer and finer levels of intelligence, finer levels of thought, culminating in the experience of a field of consciousness that is beyond thought, the fountainhead of all mental activity, the fountainhead of the universe. That the human brain physiology, with help, and I'll talk about that in a minute, human brain physiology can easily traverse the entire range of human intelligence, corresponding to deeper levels of nature's intelligence, culminating in the direct experience of a field of intelligence, a field of consciousness that is completely universal, completely unified in its nature. That experience is spontaneous for many, many people. That experience has been with us for millennia. That experience has been the crowning achievement of the greatest cultures, the greatest enlightened sages. That's amazing. The human brain physiology can fathom the deepest levels of intelligence and ultimately come to rest as consciousness expands to its most expanded state. Consciousness can identify with universal intelligence, universal consciousness. And when that happens, it's dramatic. The transformation in the structure and function of the human brain that supports this expanded state of consciousness is profound. And that's why researchers over the past 25 years have identified the field of holistic experience or spiritual experience or transcendental experience as a fourth major state of human consciousness, distinct from waking, dreaming, and sleeping. All of these states have their subjective characteristic, and they all have their corresponding physiological correlates. The correlates of pure consciousness, fourth state of consciousness, are totally unique and include, among other things, what these obscure diagrams are attempting to describe. During this meditative state of expanded comprehension, global comprehension, absolute silence, these little mountain peaks begin to reveal themselves, and every time you see a peak in these so-called co-spars, means 95% correlation in the electrical activity of the frontal, of the left and right hemispheres of the brain, and also the frontal and occipital lobes of the brain, and the parietal lobes, and the temporal lobes. The whole brain functions in concert. It's remarkable to even see the electrical activity of the meditating brain. How many have ever gotten to see their own EEG? A few people. It's depressing. Oh, there's no order in it whatsoever. It's like perhaps an orchestra warming up before the conductor takes the stand. Every part of the brain, every part of the mind, every part of the personality is doing its own thing. There's very little by way of integrated brain functioning, which is too bad, really, because the research has found that the integrated functioning of the brain, EEG coherence, it's called, and global EEG coherence. EEG coherence correlates with IQ, creativity, learning ability, academic performance, memory, alertness, emotional maturity, moral reasoning, psychological stability. Everything good about the brain depends on its orderly functioning. But orderliness of brain functioning is something we have, more or less, but it can be developed quickly, longitudinally. and students who may not be so orderly, may not be so bright. So as an educational tool, I'm beginning to suggest this universal experience that is our birthright, holistic experience, that is should be fundamental in education, because that experience of this fourth state of consciousness, spiritual experience, holistic experience, is unique. It is the only experience that engages the total brain. It is the only experience that enlivens the total brain. And I'll talk about the impact of that in education and on society shortly. But first, I wanted to correct something I implied a minute ago. I said that the human, and I don't talk about this generally, it scares some people, but I think you can take it, and I won't talk about it for long. The human brain, when you think about it, it's unusual to imagine that this rather coarse and macroscopic object is subtle and beautiful and divine and splendid and magical as it really is. But it is a macroscopic structure, and its finest relevant structure is the DNA molecule within every brain cell, which is a remarkable universe, a miraculous universe in itself. But it's like a battleship. It's like threading a needle with a battleship for a human DNA to experience universal intelligence. Because it's macroscopic, it's slow. Because universal intelligence, this unified field, this field at the foundation of the universe, has its own natural vibrational frequency. And what is it? It's called the Planck frequency, 10 to the 44th cycles per second. That's about 1,000,000,000,000,000,000 times faster than we can vibrate, than the human brain can possibly reverberate, can sync with. And yet we do it. How do we do it? How do we synchronize with? How do we identify with universal intelligence and grow in power, grow in the ability to fulfill a thought by mere intention, grow in happiness? We do it partly by aid of another body. There's another body. I don't know what to call it. I'll call it a thought body. And if this thought body is specifically engineered to bridge the gap between this very material level of the human brain and this very ethereal level of completely unmanifest consciousness. This is what it's made of. It's made of what are called hidden sector fields. The superstring, today's unified field theories, provide a rigorous calculational context in which you can ask and answer these types of questions. Unfortunately, the calculations are perversely complicated. But nevertheless, you can ask these questions: what is a thought made of? And you can address those questions. So here's how it works. Our universe, according to today's unified field theories based on the superstring, our universe consists of matter. And it consists of the known forces, electromagnetism, the strong and weak nuclear forces, and gravity. Four forces, and the particles on which they act. In addition to that, there is also something called hidden sector matter, subtle matter. It fills the room. It's another disconnected world. It has its own forces. As you can see, these are the known forces of nature emerging from the unified field. These are the hidden sector forces of nature emerging from the unified field. They populate the universe. They fill the room. Physicists haven't talked too much about the hidden sector world because it had been thought that only via gravity does it communicate with us. And the gravitational force between you and me is negligible, useless, no connection, practically speaking. But that turned to be just out to be sloppy thinking. In most realistic string theories, something remarkable happens. There is an admixture of what we call light, the photon, with what they call light, their own photon. And as a result of that, the hidden sector world, although dark, is dimly lit. And you can peer into that world. Particularly, certain types of hidden sector matter, which clumps to ordinary matter electrostatically for this reason. Certain foods contain concentrations of hidden sector matter, and that gets concentrated in different areas of the brain, particularly in what are called the subcortical structures or basal ganglia. So clinging to this material body, even deep within the DNA, are clumps of this quantum matter, hidden sector matter. And that matter looks directly into the other world. The other world is the thought world. Our brains can think, but in a very digital way, very cumbersome way. Subtler thoughts, finer thoughts, these are all upheld by this hidden sector body that we carry with us and that clings to us electrostatically. So what is a subtle body? What is a thought body? It's a stable, self-sustaining structure of superconducting hidden sector currents swirling around us. Thoughts. That body is engineered to effortlessly traverse the entire range of physical creation, from macroscopic to microscopic, and serves as our bridge to real spiritual experience. This body can separate from the physical body, although there's very little practical reason to do that. But at least now we have a physics of it. We know what it is. We can even do experiments to see it. So, enough said on that subject. The important point is, whatever body you use, your material brain or your body of thought, human awareness has this remarkable capacity to experience finer and finer levels of intelligence of the mind, finer levels of intelligence of nature, culminating in the experience of a level of intelligence that is completely universal and unified in its nature. Cosmic intelligence governing the universe. And this universal intelligence is not foreign from us. This is our very self. Our subjectivity. Our consciousness, which makes us living experiencers. That life, that consciousness, is by virtue of universal intelligence. There is no consciousness, ultimately, other than that. Ultimately, there's only one consciousness in this room. And it is me, and it is you, and it is each and every one of us, and it resides here, at the source of thought, at the foundation of the universe. It is the governor, the supreme governor of the universe, and it is our birthright. It is our self. How do we know that for sure? Boy, I really want to do this to you. Let me just say, you can, in addition to talking very qualitatively as we have, you can examine quantitatively what emerges from this field of consciousness within. And what does emerge from the field of consciousness within? Thought, impulses of consciousness. What are they made of? Well, go down there sometime and look at them, and you will see that they are made out fundamentally of five elements, which I will borrow from, this would, I guess, be from the Vaisheshika system of thought, but any tradition essentially has the same thing in different words. They're called Akash, Vayu, Tejas, Apas, Prithivi, or space, air, fire, water, ether, earth, the subtle elements from which all thoughts are made of. Or looking at a different tradition, we can look at the tradition of Ayurveda. Ayurveda combines these five into three more holistic entities called prakritis, vata, pitta, kapha prakritis. Now let's look from the standpoint of physics. What does physics say about matter, the universe, emerging from the field of the superstring, the unified field? Well, what do we have? We have the universe is made of five elements, and they're called gravity, gravitino, spin one forces, the quarks and leptons, the matter fields, and their unfortunate friends, the spinless Higgs bosons. These are the five elements, five fundamental categories of matter and energy responsible for the physical universe. And these five can be also viewed in terms of three more holistic entities called superfields. And if you look at them, they are not just quantitatively, but functionally, qualitatively the same. For example, what is gravity? Gravity, according to Einstein, is the curvature of space-time geometry. Space as dynamical medium. Space as subtle substance. What is akasha? Space as subtle substance. Space as dynamical medium. They're the same, just the language is different. And I have to show you one more thing. Instead of looking at this emergent tree of life, the emergent world of thought from the field of consciousness, or the emergent world of matter from the field of the unified field, which now turn out to be, we see, the same. I'm going to spend 2 or 3 minutes looking more deeply in here. This is called zero-point energy, the self-reverberations of unity. Unified field reverberates within itself, like a guitar. It has its own natural reverberant frequencies. You bang a guitar, you get a racket, but it settles down quickly and you can soon hear 6 fundamental tones, corresponding to the 6 guitar strings, and their overtones and harmonics. Those are the natural, stable, reverberant frequencies of a guitar. You can bang the unified field or stimulate the field of pure consciousness, and it will reverberate. It has its own natural, reverberant frequencies. And I want to show you those. We're now looking at the structure down here, the structure of consciousness, and the structure of the unified field of physics to show that they are the same. And there they are. In the field of consciousness, this cognition or hearing of the reverberant frequencies of our own inner awareness, that's called many things. I'll call it Veda. Veda is sound, described as the blueprint of the universe. Fundamental frequencies of consciousness, Agni, Mi, Le, Purohitam, Yajnasya, Deva, the building blocks of speech, from which thought, speech, and ultimately the universe are constructed. The superstring unified field has its own internal reverberant frequencies shown down here. These are called the left-moving and right-moving free fermionic degrees of freedom of the superstring. There are 192 of these, and there are 192 of these. It's the same mathematical structure. Unified field of consciousness is the unified field at the basis of the universe, open to direct experience in the meditative state, in the spiritual experience. What's cool about this is, perhaps not surprising, the human body, the human nervous system, the human brain, mirrors this same 192-fold structure. Of course, the brain is the physical instrument of consciousness. So perhaps it's not so surprising that the structure of the human brain would mirror the structure of our consciousness. And there it is. If you look at the brain, the structure, the gateways to the brain, the gateways to consciousness, there are 192 ascending and descending reticular formations of the brain and central nervous system. I could go on and on about that because it's a very profound correspondence, but our brain mirrors our consciousness, which is the blueprint of the universe. Let's look at the universe. There it is. This is the structure of the galaxies across the far-flung universe. Here we are. 100 million light years away is the so-called Virgo cluster, once the largest, farthest cluster of galaxies that could be seen. This is the so-called Great Wall of galaxies. This is the so-called Great Void. But the universe as a whole has this sort of repetitive pattern. It has a definite structure to it. That structure also, the structure of the universal body, the cosmic physiology, is the same structure that we saw in the human brain, is the same structure that we saw at the basis of human consciousness. I'll show you how it works. Before the beginning, the universe was contained in a point, the point of superunification, the unified field humming within itself, reverberating within itself, infinitely compactified intelligence. We saw those fluctuations. I've tried to draw them sort of artistically here. This is the unmanifest reverberations of the unified field within itself prior to the emergence of space and time. Then something called inflation happens. Exponential mushrooming of the universe. The universe suddenly grows by 100 powers of 10 or more. That which was microscopic, smaller, frankly, than a point, becomes a huge cosmic mosaic. Shown here, this is the distribution of light, the distribution of matter and energy across the universe. It's this, simply this, stretched to be cosmic in proportions. Now, after about 300,000 years, quite early in the history of our universe, matter and radiation went their separate way. The radiation hasn't changed. You look out into the world today and you'll see the very same structure as you saw before the beginning. But the matter, consisting of galaxies, hydrogen, helium, stars, it gravitationally self-attracts and clusters into a more precipitated, exaggerated structure. And there it is, the structure of galaxies in the heavens today. In any case, that structure, which follows from that structure, these are just macroscopic expressions of the microscopic structure of reality, which is our self, reflected in our own brain. So there it is, the large-scale structure of the universe, predictable from that formula. Just as the structure of our human physiology is predictable from that formula. So there's some beautiful expressions from the Upanishads that I think perhaps express this miracle better than I can. This is from the Katha Upanishad, Anuranyan Mahato Bahiyan. That which is smaller than the smallest, the point value of creation, the unified self-interacting dynamics of consciousness beyond space and time, that is also bigger than the biggest. The entire structure of the universe is the macroscopic display of the microscopic reality of consciousness. Another one, tad dure tad antike, that which is far away, far beyond the reach of the most powerful telescopes, that reality is also within. Human physiology mirrors cosmic physiology. Finally, aham brahmasmi, I am that, thou art that, all this is that, showing that human physiology, cosmic physiology, all of this universe is just the expression of the eternal self-interacting dynamics of universal consciousness knowing itself. Back to practicalities. Thank you. Important summary point. We've seen that the human mind can identify directly with universal consciousness, the unified field of all the laws of nature, in a fourth major state of human consciousness, which is the most fundamental universal state of human awareness. Secondly, importantly, this state, which once stabilized, is called enlightenment. This is our birthright. The analysis of the human brain shows that every individual is cosmic. The human brain is specifically engineered to live the scientific truth of the unity of life in higher states of consciousness. Let's talk about enlightenment for a moment. Stabilization of this experience of universal consciousness. That's shown in the same study. Longer-term meditators exhibit a permanency and an enhancement of this profound orderliness of the brain, which comes momentarily from the very first experience of holistic consciousness. It's stabilized to the point where even after meditation, throughout the day, the experience of unbounded awareness, universal consciousness, is maintained even during the depths of sleep, even during dreaming, even during anesthesia. One is never lost to the unbounded cosmic nature of oneself. The scientific truth of the unity of life is a living reality in one's day-to-day life. This contrasts with contemporary education. What we're seeing from many of our high school graduates today is brains like these, with what are called functional holes, particularly clustering in the critical prefrontal cortex. Now, these functional holes are not actual physical holes in the brain, but they are parts of the brain that just, where the neurons just aren't firing, that don't actively participate in our moment-by-moment experience. Tremendous fragmentation of the human brain. And particularly up here, this area of the brain is supposed to be our rational filter, protecting us against primitive, aggressive, violent impulses. When that doesn't function, what happens? Columbine, youth violence becoming adult violence, astronomical incarceration rates. Why does education do this? The whole approach to education is archaic. The whole approach to education is still what I would call fact-based education. Education based upon the dissemination of facts, isolated facts of knowledge. Education must incorporate the holistic experience of who we are, unbounded cosmic nature. If you've been to school recently, you'll remember that the farther you go in school, the more narrow your knowledge becomes. At the age of about 1 month, a child born with global EEG coherence begins to focus that broad comprehension through the narrow channels of perception, can begin to recognize the mother's face, and that's important. And then throughout one's childhood, one becomes more proficient at sharply focusing our awareness to recognize and manipulate the environment. And then, of course, education accentuates and reinforces the ability to focus sharply. No student gets a muy bien star for gazing out the window. By master's level, you discover you're learning more and more about less and less. And by the doctoral level, you really have become the world's greatest expert in nothing. Now, specialization itself is perhaps not the evil. It's the lack of regular experience of unbounded awareness, which is our cosmic self. And without that, since 1 month old, we become more and more narrowly focused. We become cerebrally myopic. We can only see the parts, but we lose the whole. And the sort of that gets ingrained in the actual physiological structure of the brain, and it leads to this sort of functional lesions and fragmentation in our experience of life, lack of wholeness in the experience of life. When pure consciousness is stabilized, that is enlightenment. That is permanent grounding in the cosmic reality of who we are. Ownership of our status as the generator of universes. And invincibility and freedom from bondage. What's bondage? Bondage means it's a description of waking consciousness in which the objects of experience are all that we are at that moment, because the unboundedness, which is our true nature, has been overshadowed by the specifics of the objects of experience. That defines waking consciousness. If you're having mashed potatoes for lunch and you enjoy mashed potatoes, it's great. If you're having steamed okra, it's horrible, because at that moment, that is all there is to life. The okra, even the potatoes would be enhanced if it were on the ground of unbounded bliss consciousness. To sacrifice that universal life for the sake of something as localized as an okra is a tragedy. And it also brings inner invincibility. One can never be crushed by whatever happens in the environment, which is because we are really, life is so much bigger than that. And what's nice about that is it frees up the emotions to flow and for the heart to expand. Expand without fear, to the point where love becomes so rich and so universal that it's traditionally called another state of consciousness, beyond enlightenment, called usually God consciousness. Because the glory, when you're in love with the creation, you see the finest values of it. You see the majesty of God's creation, and that's called God consciousness, which is a stepping stone to unity consciousness, the ultimate state of human evolution, in which everything and everyone is experienced for his or her reality of unity. The whole universe becomes the play and display of my cosmic self. In unity consciousness, what a world we will have. As one behaves towards others, automatically as one would have them behave unto you, because that separation is gone. Other is self, and self is other. And that is really the first state of consciousness consistent with the new scientific view of the universe as fundamentally unified at its core. Let me conclude this part of the talk by saying, higher education should be for higher consciousness. It should develop the brain holistically so that the unity of life is a living reality in daily life. The incorporation of holistic experience, the meditative experience, spiritual experience, should precede spending for new prison construction or even internet education. The implications for society of such education, which is so incredibly easy to implement, just by adding to whatever anybody already teaches, add to that experience of fact-based education, consciousness-based education, the regular experience of unbounded awareness that develops the total brain. Thank you. A quick couple of points. We can do questions, can we not? Is that practically possible? Yes, it is. So let me just quickly conclude. Implications for society, massive. The most important side benefit of enlightenment, which I didn't even mention, shame on me. Most important side benefit is spontaneous, life-nourishing action. In that maximally expanded state of human comprehension, we are global citizens. That means, in that expanded state, we know how to fulfill our own aspirations with maximum effectiveness and in our best long-term interests, while simultaneously comprehending and supporting the interests of society as a whole. Spontaneous right action, life spontaneously in accord with natural law, is a byproduct of a fully developed brain. And a state of enlightenment where total natural law, the unified field, is fully lively in our individual awareness, so that any thought, any impulse of feeling or thought emerging from that totality of natural law is automatically aligned with natural law, the same universally nourishing intelligence that governs the lives of millions of species here on Earth and trillions throughout the galaxies, that gave life to them all, that sustains them all, that maintains orderliness throughout the vast universe. That intelligence is our intelligence. And functioning from that, our actions are as universally life-supporting as the actions of nature. And finally, our schools and institutions can themselves become powerful radiators of unity and coherence for society. I will just show you, for example, there, an experiment, one of 52 experiments published in the world's top, snootiest, most rigorous, nasty scientific journals, testing the global influence and societal impact of group meditation. It is more powerful in terms of the societal effect to experience and stimulate the field of unity in a group like this. more powerful. Individually, it has the same effect of profound reduction of stress and expansion of comprehension. But remember, our consciousness at its core is a global field. When we stimulate that field, it has an effect. No man is an island. No woman is an island. We affect our families, our work environments. And if enough of us are involved, the whole environment. Groups of individuals, even thousands of individuals, 8,000 individuals approximately, has been found to be enough to transform events reliably on a global scale. This is one of the earliest studies published in the Yale University Journal of Conflict Resolution, where the war in the Middle East was extinguished 7 times through the assembly of meditating groups of different sizes, located at different distances from the center of the conflict. In every case, there was an immediate drop in war deaths, war injuries, levels of conflict, and there was progress towards peace among the rival factions, generated through groups of several thousand people or more, collectively stimulating and experiencing the field of unity within. In the vicinity of such meditating groups, you can measure more EEG coherence, lower plasma cortisol, increased serotonin in non-meditating subjects in the vicinity of meditating groups. To me as a physicist, and I know I'm unusual in this way, I love understanding the mechanics of how you and I affect each other from 1,000 miles away. And there is a whole rich physics of it that we won't go into, but I'll just mention here that we affect one another on every level. Classical, quantum mechanical, quantum field theoretic, and unified field theoretic. Superficially, classically, we have the spoken word. We have physical contact. We have a visual gesture at a traffic jam. We have the telephone, internet, global communications. We are a global village. We affect one another, but more deeply, on a fine level of feeling, at the quantum mechanical level, even all the way down at the unified field theoretic level, where we are one, we influence each other very profoundly. I'll show you a picture of the last of those mechanisms, a unified field theoretic mechanism of global contact. This is called a space-time wormhole. Space-time wormholes are tunnels through space and time that connect distant regions of the universe where information or matter falls in, disappears here, and appears there. These were the stuff of science fiction. Maybe you saw Contact, the movie by Carl Sagan, where he used such a space-time wormhole as a subway system between galaxies. Now we know that these exist. Now we can create them in principle in the laboratory. But more importantly, we know that our universe is crisscrossed by these information links, which can communicate information, not only instantaneously between here and China, but through such a wormhole, you could send a signal to China right now that would appear in China last month. Wow. These wormholes are not time-bound, and they provide, in addition to the physics we know, in addition to the rational, causal universe we know, they provide a whole other universe of events. Perhaps we call these synchronicity, coincidence, whatever. But there are events, mechanisms for the fulfillment of our desires that do not work in a linear temporal fashion. You run out of gas today. Thank God my wife remembered to put a spare tank in the trunk yesterday. It's my desire now to please get to this lecture on time that caused my wife to remember to put the darn spare tank of gas in the trunk yesterday. Has anyone ever had that type of experience of supportive nature? That can only be understood on the basis of adding these space-time wormholes to what otherwise appears to be a flat classical space-time in which we normally think we live. I'm just showing that as an example of the fact that at the level of the unified field, at the level of our own deepest consciousness, the reality is truly beyond space and time.
And the limits of our influence at that level are truly unbounded. So it is easy to see how a group, even of this size, collectively experiencing our innermost self, can generate such a coherent influence to put out war, even in war-torn areas. Last two slides. I have become a little bit disillusioned with the democratic process. Only because, ultimately, the way life works, we get the government we deserve. In a democracy, we get the government we elect. We may not like that, but as a collective consciousness, we get the government we deserve. How can you improve government fundamentally? Raise the deservability. Raise the collective consciousness of society. And for this purpose, primarily, we recently founded what we call the U.S. Peace Government. It is a complementary government. It does not compete with existing governments, which are primarily concerned with crisis management. Instead, its purpose is to quietly but effectively prevent problems and promote peace. How can you prevent problems? How can you change human behavior to prevent ill health and problems? What the government has tried doesn't work. It is called coercion, threat of punishment, prisons. The United States has the harshest criminal code in the world, and even despite the death penalty, we have the highest incidence of murder of any country in the world. Threat of punishment is not an effective deterrent to crime and is not effective modifier of human behavior. You've got to change the person from the inside out. Raising the collective consciousness of society, that's being done right now. We're just opening our fourth Peace Palace. We're doing 200 peace palaces in the largest cities of the United States, which will be meditation halls for people who will come and join in raising the collective consciousness as a group and creating an oasis of peace in our stress-ridden cities and bring the behavior of the people to be more in accord with natural law for prevention-oriented government. In addition, we're building a University of Peace, first building shown on the bottom, for up to 40,000 students. And this is going to be, we just looked for land, not far from here, too far from here, actually. There has been a global proliferation of military academies and graduate war colleges dedicated to advancing the art and science of war. But we already live with mutually assured destruction and nuclear overkill, so of what possible good could it be to enhance the destructive power of nations? Why not have one university in the world dedicated solely to the prevention of war and the promotion of peace, and creating a new profession in the world, not of soldier, but professional peacemaker, equipped with the knowledge... Thank you. So that is what we're doing. It is an all-volunteer government, and it is a complementary government. But like complementary medicine, which began with no support and no official government stature, by serving the needs of the people, it soon grew to be larger in terms of utilization than conventional medicine, and ultimately made its way into the National Institutes of Health and federal funding and all of that, based on the support of the people, based on the role it played. So I hope and foresee that the idea of a complementary government will soon become the primary governing body of this country. And with your help, I hope it will. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.